Hello, my name's Kate Rowles and I'm interviewing you for the Wellcome Trust, so you're taking part in Anthony Gormley's new art project One and Other at Trafalgar Square. The date today is the 13th of July 2009, and if I can please ask you to state your full name, your date of birth and where you come from.
My name's Alex McCulloch. I was born 17th May 1965 and I live in Tunbridge Wells in Kent.
You live there? Is that where you're from originally?
I was born in South London.
And how are you today?
Very well, thank you.
Yeah.
Very tired, long busy days at work, but lots of energy for this.
Brilliant. And what was it about this project that made you want to get involved?
I loved the democracy of it. I loved the visibility of it. I loved the fact that it was taking place outside in a public space. I loved the fact that there were no parameters particularly, that there were no guidelines, that one was just invited to pose the question to oneself, what might this be? And it just seemed a very wide and exciting and democratic thing to be doing.
And is that quite important to you, those aspects of the project?
Sometimes I think that art can be potentially exclusive. Sometimes it can be enclosed in places where maybe people who might get something out of it will never encounter it. And it was really exciting for me that it was outside, definitely. Yeah.
What is it about the fact that it's outside that appeals?
The very fact that that it is such a public space, that it doesn't require you to go through the great portals of the National Gallery or into one of the grand and beautiful buildings that I've spent a lot of time looking at art, and I'm very happy to go in those places, but I'm always very excited by discovering art in different places and in different ways, and just encountering things in the street that you aren't normally expecting to see is always something that's incredibly energising for me, so I liked that aspect about it.
And what happened when you found out that you've got a place? Can you remember that and how that felt?
I had assumed that I wouldn't get a place. When I first applied, I didn't really give too much thought to how many people might apply or how many places might be available. But as time moved on and more momentum gathered around the project and more visibility around the project, I just assumed, as I hadn't heard anything, that I wouldn't hear anything, and I'd kind of written it off. So when the email came that said that I'd been offered a place, I was incredibly excited and phoned everybody that I knew, and interestingly, so many people hadn't heard of the Plinth Project, so that was again another way for me to start the ball rolling of telling people about it and sharing my energy for it. Yeah, it was really exciting.
And what kind of reactions did you get from the people?
Then, as even up till today, a really big mixture of things. Some people who knew about it already, who just said, oh my gosh, that's amazing. A lot of people who had not come across it, didn't know what it was, couldn't begin to imagine or understand why I would wish to do such a thing or what it meant, what it made me part of. Just a whole range of different experiences, from complete understanding and sharing to total puzzlement.
And what are you going to do on the plinth today?
I am going to take with me a spinning wheel and I'm going to spin English sheep fleece from last year's shearing from a flock kept in Dorset in Lulworth, and I'm going to spin it into yarn.
Why are you going to do this?
Spinning, along with many other textile and hand crafts, has been very important to me. Since my earliest childhood, it's been my great good fortune to have skills handed on to me, and by starting with my mother and all through my life, I've just acquired knowledge and been given it by incredible teachers, and it's been so sustaining and so nurturing to me to be able to make things. And I have discovered as I've gone through life that people who have any skill to make anything, whether it's baking a cake well or knitting a sweater or turning a bowl or weaving a basket or even fixing a car in some way, the ability to make something gives you a sense of self-worth and power, and immediately involves you in community in a way that's unparalleled. And this is really important to me. And I love the simplicity of it, and I love the history of it. I love the fact that it's a technology that's existed since before history has been documented, and continues to be shared by people all around the world. So it just makes me feel supremely human and supremely empowered.
And who taught you to spin?
My very first spinning took place at Glastonbury Festival, and I was taught by a wonderful woman called Sarah Harris, who runs a shop in Clevedon outside Bristol. And she was up on the green crafts field, and I had gone to Glastonbury with many things in mind, but including that I wanted to learn to spin, and I knew I would be able to learn to spin up there on the green crafts site. So that was where my first experience took place.
And how old were you then?
Oh, I was let me see, I was in my late 30s at that point.
And did you say that your mother taught you?
My mother taught me, yeah, my mother taught me. I have memories of sewing before I have memories of being able to write. I have memories of the feel of the needle and thread going through a fabric. And so from my very, very earliest memories, I was able to sew. And I think I first learned to knit and crochet when I was maybe 6 or 7. And so those skills have been with me, taught me by my mother, my German mother, for, you know, since I was able to articulate myself in the world, really.
And the wool that you're spinning, mm-hmm. it's from a very particular place. Why this place?
Last year, my friends and I had the great good fortune to be invited by Rob de Bank to run a knitting tent at Camp Bestival. And such a thing had not, as far as I could imagine, ever been done before. And we didn't know what to expect at all. And we just turned up with some yarn and some needles and some spinning wheels and ourselves. And it turned into the most extraordinary weekend of sharing skills and stories and teaching people and reteaching people who hadn't done that those things for a very long time. And it was so inclusive. We were teaching skater boys to crochet their own beanies. We were teaching older women how to do the lace that they'd forgotten how to do. And we were teaching families, whole families together. And they in turn were then teaching each other. Children were teaching their parents and things. And it was really inclusive. And it was the most extraordinary, wonderful sharing and teaching experience. And Camp Bestival is a place at Lulworth Castle, in the grounds of Lulworth Castle, and they also have a farm there where they keep fibre animals, and they have a small flock of sheep. And so we were fortunate enough to take away some of last year's shearing with us when we left. And so this is some of the fleece from the Lulworth flock from memories of teaching at Camp Bestival in Dorset last year.
And what are you going to spin? Are you going to make it into anything?
I'm going to spin yarn today. I'm going to the process is that you take the raw fleece and you spin it, and then you need to ply that yarn. So you basically, if you can imagine, one, it's like all of us, one little thread is not so strong, but when you ply two or three together, it becomes much stronger than the sum of its parts. So in a way, that's like community projects too, I guess. I will be spinning single threads today, and then I will be able to ply them together to make a yarn to work with.
And what do you think you would make the yarn into?
I'm waiting for the yarn to tell me what it wants to be made into, because many spinners will tell you that you sometimes go into the spinning with the intention of making something, but sometimes the fleece just tells you what it wants to be. and I'm going to wait to see what comes out of my fingers and what comes out of the fleece. I haven't prepared it in too much. It's been washed, so it's clean, but it hasn't been carded or prepared in any way. So the yarn that will come out of my hands today will be quite characterful. It will be, it'll have quite a lot of texture. It won't be too smooth. It won't be too processed. But it will invite me into a project, and I don't yet know what that might be.
And I noticed that you've got a spinning wheel with you. Mm-hmm. Where is that from?
That wheel, well, it's like all objects, it has a history. That wheel is in fact my wheel, as I didn't bring a wheel up from Tunbridge Wells today. This was lent to me by a good friend who lives in London. He unfortunately can't be here today because he's in Spain on holiday enjoying himself. But so that wheel is borrowed, so that's another shared experience. The wheel itself was made in New Zealand. The tools for spinning, with a very few exceptions at the moment, tend to be imported, because in this country for a very long time the interest in handcrafts ebbed. It wasn't very high on anyone's priority list, whereas in other parts of the world they've carried on making high quality tools and developing high quality tools to do these things. So most of the spinning wheels that are popular in the UK today come from New Zealand or the States. And this wheel has been imported from New Zealand.
Do you spin as part of a group at all?
I spin as part of many groups, not formally. I'm not involved in any guilds or organisations, although I very much support the work that they do. But what happens is that knitters and spinners tend to come together, and where one appears, then sometimes there will be two sharing each other's ideas and watching each other work and learning from each other. And so I spin regularly at iKnit London in Waterloo. I spin as often as I can in public. It's been my great good fortune to spin at some of the agricultural shows and public places, just to demonstrate the work, and that really is one of my favourite things to do, because people are always interested in the wheel and seeing how it works, and it usually elicits stories from people as well about how they may have remembered grandmothers in particular doing this kind of work, or it suggests ideas to them about countryside or about home or about nurturing. So yeah, pub places and very often with groups of people. Yeah.
And is this something that you do as a hobby, or do you do it for a living at all?
I don't do any textile crafts for a living. I teach from time to time, but the making of things is, I heard it recently summed up by somebody about knitting, and she said, some things you do for money and some things you just do for love.
What's important to you in life at the moment?
Everything's so important, isn't it? The sun coming up in the morning is important, but then sometimes it rains and that's important too. I there's such a range of things that are important. Probably if I had to say one thing, it would be not attaching ourselves too much to the idea of credit crunch and impoverishment and a lack, because I think we have such richness beyond our wildest dreams, particularly in the West. We suffer from no lack, we suffer from no crunch, we have everything we could possibly desire, and we needn't be preoccupied with what the media and the banks are telling us. If we just look to our friends and look to our own skills and look inside ourselves a bit more rather than looking out, we'll see that there is no lack.
Who are you doing this for, taking part in one another?
Anybody who cares to be with me. Anybody who watches. Anybody who's in Trafalgar Square this evening, anybody who's watching on the web, anybody who happens to glance the statement that I've written about what I'm doing and might feel moved to think something about it. It's very much for me, because it's a fabulous and unique experience and one I feel incredibly privileged to be part of. But anybody who wants to share in it.
What impact do you think it will have?
the project as a whole is already having the most extraordinary impact. It's gathered momentum so much in the first week. Already I'm seeing web threads and discussion threads of people saying, I've been really drawn in by this. I was really not interested before it started, and now I'm watching people and seeing what's happening. And I think it's so enriching to see individuals doing what is unique to them, rather than looking out into the world of the high street, which is the same everywhere you look, or the television, which is the same for the same experience for everybody. To look at an individual expressing themselves completely uniquely is endlessly entertaining and interesting and enriching and informing. And I think that's going to be the biggest impact, is what the things that people have been prompted to think, and the things that people have been exposed to that they may never have seen before.
Can you tell me a little bit about your social background?
I don't really understand the question.
I suppose just a little bit more about what it's like where you're from, and how you feel that shaped you as a person.
Well, I guess if I go back to those early times, I was born in 1965, and so I grew up in the 70s, and that was a time when handcraft was still fairly respected, but by the middle of the 70s, that was ebbing away. And of course the great pre-punk summer of 76 changed everything culturally in this country. And then we moved into the beginning of the 80s, which was a time where handcraft was all but ebbing away. I think it'd been very, very present at the beginning of the punk movement, the whole idea of making for yourself. But that was very quickly superseded by a kind of slick 80s technology-informed culture. And so very rapidly became the geeky kid. And despite the fact that it was terribly unfashionable and nerdy, I carried on making things and sewing and embroidering and so forth, which was very much against the grain of my cultural life at the time. And although I never felt eliminated or excluded, and I was certainly part of a circle of friends, it was very left field to be doing embroidery in 1983. It was not something that people did, and so I guess that that sense of against the odds and doing it the hell anyway because I found it so interesting and nurturing, I guess that has informed my way I view the world and the way I interact with people. And I probably jump on other makers and befriend them more readily because I spent such a long time kind of being the only one.
Is this something that you have studied? I suppose it's a very passing on knowledge from one from generation to another. I get the impression it's something you're really passionate about, which I can see. Is this something that's kind of a political statement as well for you, do you feel?
There is an extent to which everything that we choose to do or we choose to distance ourselves from is a political statement. Personally, I don't fully articulate that in the way that I engage with the world, and it's not something that I find very present in the handwork that I do. I do it for other reasons. There are healing and restorative and community and self-worth issues, and they are things that I feel and experience much more obviously than I do the political side to this. Nevertheless, I recognise that, you know, there is politics in that, absolutely, and indeed the wider politics of living slowly and respecting the resources that you're using and making things that last. Indeed, they have a very wide political impact, which I'm aware of, but when I'm just sitting with the wheel or the yarn, these are not sort of thoughts that occur to me particularly.
And what do you do for a living?
I'm a project manager in government publishing, something very different to this, although I do teach textile crafts part-time as well.
And how do you find teaching?
I would never have said that I was a particularly good teacher, and I would never have said that I was a very confident teacher. However, the business of engaging with learners makes life so much more interesting. I mean, an already interesting life becomes doubly interesting when you are prompted to think about how other people think, how will this person best understand, and indeed, when you encounter learners, you're always asking your question: why are they here? What do they actually want from this? And teaching compels you to strive that little bit harder to actually enter somebody else's mind, to try and see the world from their point of view. And for that reason alone, it's been extraordinary and something that I would definitely want to carry on doing, whatever the circumstances. But it's also great to be able to teach people to knit and spin, because then they can do it too. And they can hand it on too.
What does this mean to you personally, to stand on fourth plinth?
It's giving me the great privilege of being part of a unique and magnificent and impactive national event, which I'm sure that many thousands, would really, really be, grateful for the opportunity for. And it's an incredible thing. It's a unique thing, and I'm thrilled to be part of it.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome.